Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avantcard. With personalised pricing, our rates are made for you.
Joanna Fortune is with us once again. Joanna's new book is 15-Minute Parenting. Was it in the shops yet?
Have you actually gone in and seen it in the shop?
Oh yeah,
I've been that person standing there taking the selfie in front of the shelf while everyone goes, what is she doing?
Tip, go into the shop and always try and position it anywhere close to...
Oh, I'm doing that.
Just move them. Move anywhere close to a Marion...
Rearranging all the books.
Just move them close to anywhere close to a Marion Keyes book and you'll sell a few.
That's so good. Such a good idea.
that's definitely... I'm trying not to bring out a book when Marion Keyes does, because nobody sells anything.
Yeah.
Right, here's your first question. I've recently become a single parent. Tuzla are involved and my wife can no longer be unsupervised with my children. I'm also the victim of domestic abuse, which she denies. I've always been a hands-on dad, but now I'm feeling a bit overwhelmed. Crikey, and not unsurprisingly. My children don't always want to speak to their mother and I can't force them, but I'm being accused of not letting them speak to her. Meeting their mother is also difficult. Tuzla wants a supervising adult any time my wife is with my children and I can't always get someone who wants to be that person. I can't be that person due to the abuse. Now my children are starting to think I'm keeping them from their mother. This is not the case. I'm doing the best I can and things are going okay at home and school has just started, but I expect things to not always be as straightforward as they are. Have you any advice on how I can be a good dad to my four young children? They're age 1, 4, 7 and 9.
Oh my God.
Oh God, you want to find him and give him a hug.
Big time. And I that's actually such a good way to start it, because I really, really hope that this man has somebody, at least a somebody or people in his life who can rally around and be a support, because clearly this family has been through a lot. And I'm just noting that the youngest child is only 1 year old. So while a lot of these issues are probably ongoing a long time, the last year must have been particularly intense and challenging. So I mean, just my empathy on that one from the outset. And I'm picking up, and of course you're overwhelmed. That is utterly overwhelming. So that is an appropriate emotional response to have. The phone call thing is tricky, because when things are court ordered, it's often then incumbent on the primary carer, in this case dad, to ensure that the phone calls happen. But anybody who has children this age would tell you they're not inclined to sit and chat on the phone. It's not their natural way of communicating. So while you can facilitate a phone call happening, you cannot make the children speak on the phone. So speaking on the phone not being their natural way of communicating, all you can say is, I'm making the phone call or I'm answering the phone call. If the children won't come to the phone, there really isn't anything you can do, but nobody can accuse you of anything if you are facilitating the call. I'm being really technical because these legal things tend to be. In terms of supervising the access, that is such a stressor on any parent in this situation. If it is ordered by Tuzla that it has to be supervised access, I think it is okay for you to go back to Tuzla and say to them that you need their help and assistance in arranging supervised access.
Yeah, I'm surprised that Tuzla don't have that.
They just don't have the resources. Yeah, so they will put it to parents, you know, the reliable, safe parent, and say, well, can you do it? But when there's been domestic violence, that is not a viable solution, because it simply isn't safe. And often access can be misused to continue that dynamic of abuse.
Well, also, so whatever the reason for the breakup was, but obviously there may be issues with the mother. There's, you'd think they'd want someone who's neutral in there, so there's no danger of somebody accusing somebody else of doing anything.
Ideally, yes. And look, anyone in Tuzla would probably say to you, yeah, ideally, but we have nobody to do it. I guarantee that one would come down to resources, but I think you can come back and say to them, look, I have tried, I can't get somebody consistently, it is impacting the access going ahead, and at least get that on the record so that if you were to be back in court and someone was to say, but you didn't facilitate access, you can say, well, actually, this was the reason, and I did log that reason with the appropriate authorities, and I did seek support. So just to cover yourself, ideally it should be a family member or a friend who can be quite neutral but very reliable and be present all the time. If the access is to be supervised, it's not okay for anyone to step out and go to the toilet or get a cup of tea, or they need to be there all the time. Now, there are agencies that can do this. Bernardo certainly did. I stand to be corrected on that at the moment, but they certainly did have a service in one of the areas that was providing some supervised access arrangements. So you could make a call or ask again Tusla to point you in the direction of private agencies who do this, because there are people who do that provide that service.
But they would charge for it, I assume.
They will charge for it. And that's an issue. I'm coming back time and again to what support this dad must have for himself, because his children are very young, developmentally, emotionally. They've been through a lot. They're going to need a lot of him. But in order to give to your children, you have to have somebody taking care of you. You've got to have that in reserve. So I'm going to suggest you reach out to organizations like One Family, who are, you know, a single parent organization, or any parenting support groups in your area. Again, your local health center, public health nurse probably keeps a record of all those kinds of groups in your area, and it would be worth reaching out to them. You could also reach out for some support around the domestic violence experience with a men, or a local men's sheds group could be really supportive as well. And I would have to be recommending that you seek some counselling or psychotherapy for yourself if you haven't already done so. I think the best thing you can do is the sort of technical, legal, ordered things. Get those structurally attended to, but then pull back and take care of yourself so that you can take care of your kids.
Well, and hopefully he's someone who can maybe just
step in and help
every now and again.
Yeah,
because
you need a break.
Yeah. God, you poor
fella. That's a really tough situation.
My daughter, who's nearly three, eats everything in creche but refuses to eat anything but snack food at home. She plays with her dinner and throws it around, but she'll eat veggie snack and crackers to beat the band. I'm worried she's not full and would hate to think of her being hungry.
Yeah, I mean, if she's eating in creche and she will eat veggies and crackers at home, she's definitely getting enough food during the day. Now, I'm not sure, maybe at the weekends you're having a bigger problem because she's obviously not in creche at the weekends. But maybe talk to the creche about how they do mealtimes there, because the structure and predictability, the sort of routine way they're doing it, may suit your child. Because often in creche, children are actively part of the serving food. You know, when they reach a certain age, they're part of spooning the food onto the plates or laying out the table, and it gives them a sense of independence and responsibility that they're part of the activity, and you might be able to replicate some of what they do at home. Not all of it, but some of it. And certainly in creche, the children are all sitting together and eating at the same time and eating the same food. So at home, is that the case? Is she sitting down with you to eat? Is she different? Has she a different plate of food to you? Just basically, how much of that routine can you replicate there? Avoid any emotional charge around food as best you can. So within reason, don't worry, oh, is she hungry? Is she hungry? She's definitely eating enough if she's eating in creche and having creche. Yeah. And look at this, the thing she's eating at home for you is quite healthy, like veggies and crackers. You know, it's not Nutella on toast. So it could be a lot worse, and she's probably getting enough. But if you feel that there's something else going on, and it is something that, well, that means she's not eating from Friday evening till Monday morning, and you're really concerned, I would, of course, suggest you consult with a paediatric dietitian. A lot of services that provide that consultation for children also run fussy eating courses for parents, not fussy eating parents, you understand, but for those who are parenting fussy eaters. And they can be really, really helpful at just, you know, a small change that would make a big difference. Just like, oh, I never thought of that. So it would be worth reaching out to a paediatric dietitian. Again, your local health centre should be able to provide you a resource, or at least a suggested who to call on that one.
Yeah, well, the interesting thing always strikes me that in creche, when they're eating, it's all, you know, it's a group of toddlers who are the same size sitting at a smaller table eating together.
Yeah.
So it's kind of everything is on their scale. Whereas when they come home, it's the big thing. And you're put on a big seat and you're strapped into the big seat and everybody stops yourself killing yourself.
Exactly.
And so it's not the same. Really.
And that's a lot of it. Like, a lot of children do well with creche, and also they're not, you know, it's everyone's doing it, so they don't really, it doesn't occur to them to object.
Yeah.
This is just what happens, and we're all doing it, and we're all sitting there. So I think your first point of call would be to go to your creche and say, so how do you guys get her to eat, and what can I do of that at home?
I also think it's part of the natural contempt children have for their parents anyway.
But they know how to, you
know,
because you're clearly worried about her eating, and they know they're getting a reaction. Now, they don't have the kind of intricate thinking to go, oh, so it's all about this for you and I've got the button to push now. They simply know it gets a response and it pulls you into a negotiation dynamic. And so she's definitely going to keep doing that. But it sounds to me like she's definitely eating enough, at least during the week, so I wouldn't be worried about her being hungry.
Yeah.
Also, if she is a little hungry on one or two meal times, by the time the third meal comes around, she will eat.
Yeah. In fact, a texter says if she's hungry, she'll eat. That's what I found. Carla says, my daughter was a problem eater. Turned out she wanted the same plates that the rest of us had. Problem solved. So it could
be
something
like
that. It
can often be something as simple as that. Yeah.
Yeah. My 15-year-old seems to be a compulsive liar. My husband and I can't trust her, and it's putting pressure on the entire house. She lies about where she is, who she's with, if she's fed the dog, what she's eaten, even if she has the remote for the TV. Everything is a lie. I don't know where this compulsion has come from, but I need it to stop. She's back to school, and already she's been in trouble with the teacher. I tried talking to her, but it's like talking to a brick wall. I've tried taking her phone away, not letting her watch TV, giving her chores, grounding her, and pretty much everything else I can think of. Nothing is working. How can I get through to her?
Oh, no, it's a tricky one. I mean, look, there's a difference between occasional lying and compulsive lying.
Yeah.
I mean, occasional lying, first of all, it's something we all do to varying degrees occasionally. And to be honest, evasive behaviour is quite normal in adolescent development because they're actually seeking more privacy. They want you to know less about what they're doing. So that kind of evasiveness is developmentally very normal. What this parent is calling it compulsive lying, and certainly it does seem to be pervasive across, you know, it's not just one thing, because one of the first things that we look at in situations like this is there consistency in a given topic? Is she lying consistently, but about pretty much the one thing all the time?
Yeah.
And it's easier to break that apart. This seems to be everything and anything, small things, big things. A true compulsive liar generally struggles to keep track of the details of the lies they're telling simply because they are telling them all the time. Everything is a lie. So you might find that that's how you're catching her, that there are details she's tripping herself up on. But it's really important to note that compulsive liars, it's a habituation thing. That's a habit. So it's their default, and they lie out of habit rather than what they gain from it. Often they're gaining nothing from it. There's like, why would you lie about this when you're only going to get into trouble? That kind of thing. But they can't sit there and go, oh, I did it because. It's simply a habit. It's what their brain defaults to when you ask them any question. Their tendency is, well, I'll tell you something that isn't true.
Yeah. And could it be the habit is actually just like every time mom asks me something, a lie is going to come out of my mouth.
It could. It could absolutely be that. And that's one of the things I would be asking this parent about is, but the fact that it's also with the teacher and it's causing trouble outside of one parent. But often it can be a high emotional charge in a relationship with one person. And if that's the case, you've got to get back to basics about reestablishing a bond. And I don't want to make this sound easy. It's actually not easy, especially if it's compulsive lying. It's often for, you know, especially a teenager doing this, that the thrill of misleading others is what drives them rather than the reaction they're getting. So when you're doing these kind of behavioural corrections, you know, giving her chores, grounding her, that kind of thing, that's not going to affect her because it's not because of what you do or say that she's doing it. Ergo, it won't be because of what you do or say that she stops doing it.
Yeah.
It's about the thrill she's getting from it. But you've got to talk to her honestly about how lying is eroding the trust in your relationship and that you're concerned about that, that that needs to be repaired. And that if she's not going to talk to you about it, that you're going to make the decision that both of you and her dad too, that the three of you will go and talk to a professional about it. She may need to go and talk to somebody professional about this at this stage. But the fact that nothing is working is what's concerning me. I think you can talk to her about how it feels to be lied to. You can insist on every tiny lie having a full discussion, which will drive her mad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so no matter how small it is, that you insist now we have to sit down with no distraction and dissect that lie and why you did it, almost to kind of make it not worth her while lying to you.
Mm.
So you're not going to get a whole lot out of that other than try and wear down this habit that she's gotten into. But the fact that it's affecting her in school, I would think you do a little bit yourself at home on this, but then consider going to see somebody.
Yeah. Yeah.
And by somebody, I mean, you know, a therapist who's trained to work with adolescents. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd wonder now, she's back to school and already been in trouble.
Yeah, that's quick. Yeah.
That is quick. And was that a pattern last year?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the other thing that, you know, have a reflection on. I mean, you're saying that you don't know where the compulsion came from. is this something that's only started in the last year? Is it 6 months? Or is this something that actually has been there since childhood?
Yeah.
But often children who do this, they almost get away with it because they're children and people explain away their behaviour. Oh, they'll grow out of it. They'll grow out of it. And that tolerance is gone by the time you're 15. But is this a long-term behaviour or a new behaviour? And if it's new, go back to the point it started at and see what else changed. And was there an environmental trigger?
Right. OK. We did get a text in actually from the person who sent us the first question. That's the dad with the four kids, and they are visiting their mother, but they have to be, those visits have to be supervised. He says, I have a small amount of family support. Thank you for your advice. I'm doing OK, but I'm getting help from me through counselling and family supports. Your hug is very much appreciated and brought a tear to my eye. We're going to take
a
break.
I'm so glad.
After that, a couple of kids who were a bit obsessed with Fortnite.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card. With personalised pricing, our rates are made for you.
53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cent. Joanna Fortune is still with us. That question that we got about the teenager who seems to be telling a lot of lies, a few comments on that. My son has an issue with lies too, but I stopped getting angry with him over it. I pulled away slightly, like not asking him how his day was for a couple of days. 2 days later, I can see him trying to engage with me. His lies were for attention. Says a wiser mammy. That's an interesting, very interesting observation. My kid says one thing to me and another to his father. It's a power play thing. I find she lies to one of us and tells the other the truth. So we get to the bottom of it pretty quickly. And Joe on Twitter says, with the teen who's lying, get her to count to three before she answers the mother. It gives her a chance to reconsider the lie instead of blurting it out. Which again is an interesting idea.
That unless she is an absolute compulsive liar, in which case her default after 3 seconds will still be to lie. But if you've got somebody who has a tendency towards lying, or it's a new behaviour, that could be really effective.
Yeah. I'm a mother of two boys aged 10 and 12 who are obsessed with Fortnite and YouTube. The general rule is they are allowed 1 hour a day, which usually goes over on Fortnite each, plus 30 minutes on a tablet, which generally means watching some idiot YouTuber playing Fortnite. When they're not playing or watching it, it's all they seem to talk about. Luckily, they are both sporty and involved in different sports. Now that they're back to school, my husband and I want to implement a Fortnite ban during the school week and mentioned this to them last night. They both became very distressed and begged and pleaded for us not to do this to them. Are we being too strict or not strict enough? Do we compromise to 30 minutes of Fortnite a day during the school week, or do we hold the line?
Hold the line, hold the line, hold the line. So you've got to think it through before you pitch it to your kids. Like, you've got to be absolutely clear that this is what's going to happen before you say, look, we're thinking about doing this, because then they react and then you're immediately saying, will I revise what I said? So you're undermining yourself. So there's a couple of things. Just to talk briefly about boundaries without getting into the Fortnite thing at all. When you put a boundary in place, it is your children's job to push against your boundary and limits. Like, it is their job to push you to the nth degree, to breaking point, because that's what developmentally they're supposed to do. Oh, that's your boundary. Let me try and break through that. Mm. It's our job as parents to hold the boundary, so that, because otherwise what we're teaching them is whining, harassing, haranguing, going on and on and on, is actually a very effective form of communication and is a good means of getting your needs met when that's not what you want. Because if that starts to seep into other areas of your life, then you're going to have an even bigger problem. So it is okay for them to resist, but that doesn't mean that you change the rules. So you've got to hold the boundary, I'd be saying. So if you say no Fortnite during the week, don't go back and say we'll give you 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay. And immediately earlier on in your letter, you're saying, you know, they get an hour a day, but that usually goes over. So already the boundary is a little bit fluid there. And then the 30, that's what you've given them to watch, or to, sorry, to play Fortnite, but then 30 minutes on a tablet, but they're using that to watch Fortnite. So they're already blurring your boundaries. I'm going to say, insert yourself into this so that when they're playing Fortnite, sit with them, maybe not for the full hour, but sit with them for a while and say, oh, what's this? And why that? And how this? And teach me that. And can I have a go? And help me understand it. Show an interest in it so that when they're playing this game, they're not solely absorbed into the screen device and that kind of stimulation. They're actually engaged person to person and chatting to you in the moment. Mm. That's going to stop the behavior part of it. And then when they're on the iPad or the tablet, you can say, their rule is, look, they can watch YouTube, but they can't watch Fortnite because they've had their Fortnite time. And again, sit with them and say, so what are you watching? Oh, you really like this guy or this YouTuber. Tell me a bit about them. I don't follow any YouTubers. Be interested in what they're interested in. And either that's going to drive them so mad they won't want to do it because you keep asking them questions, or they actually will benefit from helping you understand what is driving their interest, and you'll find other things that actually tick those boxes. This is like a new school term thing as well, though. Lots of parents are going to be saying, that's it, that Fortnite now, it's done, it's gone, it was in every home over the summer, and it's all cold turkey now for everybody going back to school. And so these kinds of interactions are going to continue. I would say no computer games during the week, because you've enough with school, playtime, the sports activities you mentioned. That's actually quite reasonable. You're not being unreasonable at all. And at the weekend, have set rules. But as I said, please insert yourself into it and be interested in what they're interested in, because that's going to help with this. But whatever you and your husband are agreeing on, agree on it between the two of you before you pitch it to the kids. That's key.
Yeah. Now, this may be a completely unfair suggestion, but games like Fortnite are a bit addictive. They're designed to be addictive.
They're definitely compulsive. Yeah.
So, you know, it's like saying, well, we're not going to let them have cigarettes every day, just at the weekend. It still feeds the addiction.
Yeah. And it's because, you know, it's part of what their social engagement is. And it's why I think that if your child... I mean, look, I could say on here, absolutely not, throw it out the window, never play it again. It's not good for you. But realistically, parents are going, God, that's a great idea. That'll never happen. So instead, go somewhere in the middle with insert yourself into it. Honestly, I think they'll be less interested if they have to keep explaining it to you.
Yeah. Someone says, I'm a teacher and I'm laughing at the idea of giving children half an hour on Fortnite every night. I give the equivalent in homework and get nothing but complaints from the parents. Yeah, it's true for you. We're moving house and my boys, 13 and 16, are going to start sharing a room. We broke the news to them recently and they were not happy. Unfortunately, we have to downsize, but they don't understand that and think it's very unfair. How can I make the move for them as painless as possible, as they are at tricky ages and privacy is important to them?
All of that's true. I mean, they are at tricky ages and, you know, privacy is of the utmost importance when you're in your adolescence. And they're at different stages of adolescence when the idea of having each other in each other's space is probably their worst nightmare. Mm. All of that being said, you can empathize with that and say, I get it. I know how this must feel if it was happening to me when I was your age, or maybe it did and I did share a room with my sibling and there were definitely bad points, but there were some good too, and talk about that. So you've got to keep explaining it using the same language to them. Don't change what you're saying. And explain, at 13 and 16, they're well able to understand a discussion about family circumstances having changed and that you're downsizing. So if they don't understand it, you can say, look, I don't think you understand it. So let me explain it again. So that you can see where it's coming from. And it's not going to be like, oh, well, I'm fine with it. So my other point would be, it's okay for them not to be happy about it.
You
don't get to be happy with every experience that we have in life, and maybe this is a good way for them to see, okay, this isn't what you would want, this is a big change and it's difficult and it's challenging, but we'll get through it together as a family. And that's investing in that piece that you're part of a bigger system than yourself, and we'll work through it together. And also share with them, it's hard for me too, and something about the move that you're finding very difficult. In terms of what can you do, you could let them choose the layout of the new room, where each bed goes, to establish my part of the room and his part of the room, that kind of a thing. Let them do that, and suggest they draw up a schedule, because, you know, privacy is an important thing and teenagers do like a need to spend time away from everyone else in the family. So let them draw up a schedule when only one can be in the bedroom outside of sleep time now. That, okay, on a Monday between this time and this time, only the 16-year-old can be in the bedroom alone. And the 13-year-old knows that time is coming and has 10 minutes to get whatever they need out of the room, because you cannot enter it for that hour. Yeah. And equally then, the 13-year-old gets time when only they can be in the room. But you empower them to do it so that they draw up the schedule, so that when they're killing each other over it, you can remind them, actually, you drew this up and there it is stuck up on the wall. Sort it out yourself.
Yeah. Or they could maybe put screens up in the actual bedroom.
If the room facilitates that. You know, if you had a room big enough, you could certainly create two spaces within the one room, so, and that each of them is responsible for their space.
Yeah.
It's not easy. It's not definitely easy. So a lot of empathy and a little bit of problem solving. But, you know, this is life. This happens. So they're old enough now to kind of deal with the tough things as well.
Joanna, thanks a million for coming
to
us. Joanna Fortune there. We're going to take a break. Back in a couple of minutes.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card. With personalised pricing, our rates are made for you.